macro hedging and really focus of that should be first, okay, should we give some overview of the project and then we really search for input from you because the discussion paper is more or less then on the example of macro hedging for interest rate risk in banks, but we don't want to limit this project to dynamic risk management of interest rate risk. We're looking really for input with that kind of open portfolio, dynamic risk management approach also would work, for example, for foreign exchange risk, for commodity risk, and maybe also for other kind of risk. And Yushi will give us first an overview of the project before we then enter into the discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's my greatest pleasure to explain this difficult but very exciting project. Please move on to the first page, page two. Purpose of the meeting. The first purpose of this meeting is to give overview of the project. The second purpose is to seek input from you on whether the considerations about dynamic risk management for interest rate risk is applicable to other types of risks, such as commodity price risk. Let me explain. So far, our considerations have focused on dynamic interest rate risk management in banks. This is just because it is a well-known example of dynamic risk management. However, our intention is to make the accounting model available for other types of risks, such as commodity price risk. As many of you have participants from corporates, I think this is an ideal occasion for us. Okay, please move on to page three. Let me set the scene. What are the problems today? First of all, IFRS 9, IS 39, static general hedge accounting is not developed to represent dynamic risk management of open portfolios in the first place. I would explain what dynamic risk management and the open portfolios mean later, but now please make sure it is fundamentally difficult for existing accounting requirements such as hedge accounting to deal with dynamic risk management. What are the limitations of existing accounting requirements, hedge accounting? The first is one-to-one static designation. When you apply a general hedge accounting model, there are basically two assumptions. You can identify one-to-one relationship between what is hedged and what is hedging. The second assumption is, does the one-to-one relationship, once it is identified, does not change over time. But dynamic risk management is not something like this. The second issue is designation only on a gross basis. In the case of financial assets and liabilities, suppose you have a fixed interest rate assets with the amount of 100, while you have fixed rate liabilities of 80. In that case, usually risk managers in bank pay attention to the net of 20. The current hedge accounting allows you to find 20 on a gross basis from 100 in assets. But this is a little bit different from dynamic risk management view. The third issue is inability to include exposures on a behavioralized basis, such as core demand deposits. It is a very tricky issue, so let me touch upon this later. So what are the consequences? The lack of an appropriate accounting model has caused problems in transparency. For instance, hedge accounting solution could be used with the aim of stabilizing profit and loss rather than showing actual risk management. And it also caused some problems in operational feasibility. If you use static hedge accounting model to dynamic risk management, you need to have repeated discontinuations and redesignations. It is sometimes a nightmare for operations. So let me go on to the page 4. What is the purpose of the project? Our purpose is basically to develop an accounting solution that provides useful information on how entities manage risk dynamically and also operationally feasible. Let me skip second and third bullet because I already explained. Our milestone of the project is to publish DP. Our schedule is to publish it soon, this month or next month. So now, using page 5, let me explain major characteristics of dynamic risk management. The first one is risk management is undertaken for open portfolios to which new exposures are frequently added and existing exposures frequently expire. The second feature is, as the risk profile of the open portfolios changes very frequently, as a result, risk management is also updated frequently in reaction to the changed net risk position. Using the example of page 6, let me try to explain the basic nature of dynamic risk management. For the time being, please allow me to use interest rate risk management in banks. If you look at the diagram in page 6, in the left-hand side, you see assets. This diagram shows you that assets are managed as portfolio, such as mortgages, corporate loans, and bonds. You may want to call each of the portfolios, say, sub-portfolio. Please make sure each portfolio or sub-portfolio are made up of many items. Second, each portfolio, sub-portfolio, is open in the sense that you have new exposures are frequently added and existing exposures expire. In other words, today's mortgage portfolio, for instance, is no longer that of yesterday. Third, please pay attention to the rectangle in the center. Dynamic risk management, interest rate risk management, is usually implemented on a net basis. Accordingly, you no longer find one-to-one relationship between what is hedged and what is hedged. This is the basic idea of dynamic risk management. So, please move on to the page 7. What is the considerations at the ISB so far? What we are going to include in the DP is Portfolio Revaluation Approach, PRA. Main features of this approach are, first, exposures are revalued with respect to the managed risk, while risk management instruments, say derivatives such as FOAs and swaps, remain at fair value through PL. And to the extent that economic offsetting risk positions exist, that effect is reflected in profit or loss. The third big feature is you no longer have one-to-one designations. Please make sure this is not a full fair value model. The exposures are only remeasured for managed risk, say interest rate risk. Let me explain a little bit in more detail using the example depicted in page 8. Exposures are revalued by calculating net present value of cash flows based on the managed risk. In this example, managed risk is interest rate risk. In the case of banks, usually, interest rate risk is managed dynamically at the ALM section on a centralized manner. This is a very simple example of the loans with 5% contractual interest rate risk. However, in actual interest, dynamic interest rate risk in banks, suppose among the 5% contractual interest rate risk, 3% is identified as managed risk, as this is corresponds with the market interest rate risk, and it is transferred to ALM and included in dynamic risk management. The basic idea of PRA is to apply PRA to that cash flows. In this example, fixed interest rate of 3%. Specifically speaking, this 3% fixed rate interest part is revalued based on normal net present value calculation using a current interest market interest rate using as a discount rate, and the resulting effects of revaluation is recognized at profit or loss. On the other hand, the red part, 2% customer margin, that is profits for business units such as branches of banks, that can be usually understood as credit margin, is not included in the portfolio revaluation approach. Customer margin is recognized on an accrual basis as usual. This is why this approach is not a full fair value model. Let me go on to the page 9. This is very tricky issue, and the core demand deposits is a specific issue for banks, but let me try to explain this as a good example of behavioralization. Suppose each of you has current deposit account, demand deposit account in a bank. If you look at a single demand deposit, its maturity is very short, say overnight, because you can withdraw your cash, say tomorrow. However, if you see demand deposits as portfolio that made up of hundreds or thousands of demand deposits accounts, the sticky nature of demand deposits leads to the identification of a stable portion in the amount of outstanding. Accordingly, from the risk management views of banks, these core demand deposits are deemed as fixed rate deposits with longer maturities, say, for instance, 3 years for risk management purposes. This is the idea of behavioralization. Please move on to page 10. Now, please let me explain the very important issue, the scope issue. The scope issue here means what exposures to be included in the portfolio revaluation approach. This issue has significant implications for the information provided to users and on how operationally feasible for preparers when you apply the PRA. We prepared basically two alternatives, say focus on dynamic risk management and focus on risk mitigation. Let me explain what are the basic differences between the two. Usually, it is understood that risk management, say dynamic risk management, includes three major aspects: risk identification, risk analysis, and risk mitigation. If you go with the first focus on dynamic risk management, if risk is identified or analyzed, even without hedging or risk mitigation, you apply the PRA to risk, to exposure. On the other hand, if you go with the second alternative, focus on risk mitigation, if and only if risk is identified, analyzed, and mitigated, you apply the portfolio revaluation approach. Let me explain the difference in using very basic diagrams. Please have a look at page 11. You notice all of the exposures in assets and liabilities in the red circle line. That means as long as all of the exposures managed dynamically, you apply the PRA all of exposures. Quite straightforward. Please go on to the page 12. This is the case of focus on risk mitigation, and the idea of page 12 is to apply PRA to specific sub-portfolios such as mortgages and core demand deposits. Concretely speaking, if risk managers clearly identify the risk management purpose is to hedge mortgages and core deposits, you apply this approach to only these sub-portfolios. Please make sure, probably operational feasibility is one of challenges for this approach, because under dynamic risk management, it is unlikely your risk management purpose is always to hedge only mortgages and core deposits. So for instance, your risk management purpose to change to hedge to corporate loans next time. So in that case, PRA needs to have a mechanics to switch on and off of PRA. So it is a operationally tricky idea. So please move on to the example of proportion approach. It is another version of focus on risk management, focus on risk mitigation. In this example, you apply only 80% of all of dynamically managed portfolios. Again, operational feasibility is one of the challenges, because your risk management purpose can change next time to say hedge 90% rather than 80%. So this is end of my explanation on dynamic interest rate risk management in banks. So in page 14, let me give our questions to you how the idea of dynamic risk management is relevant or useful, or not useful, for your risk management. Specifically, I want to have inputs. Do you have any good examples for dynamic risk management for other risks, such as commodity prices? And next question is there a need for the PRA to be available for dynamic risk management of all entities, say, other than the dynamic risk management rate, risk management of banks? I prepared very simple example for commodity price risk in page 15. I believe you can, so this is the example of a copper trader who purchases copper in fixed price contracts and sell copper with variable price contracts and manage risk, commodity price risk using derivatives dynamically. I think you can consider this example basically in analogy with dynamic interest rate risk management impacts. So again, finally, let me explain. Final page 16. Commodity price risk may arise from purchases and sales. The difference is you have inventory in the case of commodities. The pricing of both purchases and sales contracts are based on the market price of the commodity. In this case, risk management activity might focus on pricing mismatches in purchases and sales and inventory. So let me finish my explanation and turn it to the GPF members for discussion. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Yuri. I think the approach is very, in overall, very simple, because when in current hedge accounting requirements, you have only to designate one position with one hedged instrument, which is, I think, especially if you have do risk management on the net open position, which frequently changes, which is very burdensome, because we have always have to have these designations, de-designations, and this is very, very difficult to do. And therefore, the idea is, okay, to look what goes into the net position and then do a revaluation of these positions for the managed risk. So the idea is very simple, but it comes very difficult if you say, okay, then what do you do if, for example, if you do only 60% of the position is hedged, because then you have winding, unwinding, you have to come up with rules what you do when, for example, the portion of the risk goes from 60% to 70%, so you have to decide, okay, what do you do then for the, for example, remeasurement of the first time 10%, which is then hedged. And therefore, I think the principle is very easy, and it is if you have the scope, which was then on the broader scope, you have everything in which is really then involved in risk management, and that is what Yuchi said, okay, even if you don't hedge, but if you have the risk, in this regard, you do the revaluation approach for the whole position which has a risk. It is more difficult than if you have to then restrict it to really of hedged items or the hedged position, and then okay, if you have changes. I think that is the principal idea, maybe in my words. And as Yuchi said, we will have the discussion paper, which is will be issued hopefully latest next month, that is focusing really on interest rate risk management with banks, because they have, I think, more loudly said, okay, that they need a solution, because the current IFRS 9, but the old IAS 39 hedge accounting rules are not sufficient for open position, open net positions, and therefore we have focused on that. But really the question is, what kind of risks are really managed on a dynamic basis in maybe non-banks, and really the requirement, do we need to develop this kind of approaches then for other risks than for interest rate risks, or is there a demand, is there a need in other entities and corporates really for this kind of approach? Having said that, any comments, questions, discussion, Shira?
That's a very difficult issue, as you know, probably the most difficult that you can find in the banking industry, maybe in all industries, I don't know. I don't know to make the comparison with other industries, but in the case of bank, it's complicated, and the devil is in the details. We understand the view that you try to explain through these slides. We had a presentation last week in the context of IFAS meeting. I've seen the slides here. It seems that the PRA is not effectively a full fair value model. I would define it as a transformation model, as the job of a bank is to transform, in fact, the interest risk from fixed to variable. or the opposite, depends on the strategy or the business model. And this transformation model, in fact, could be a full fair value model because it depends on different elements. It depends on the extent of the scope to which the model will be applied to the banking book. When you say in the different assumptions that you have explained that you you may apply the model to the full banking book or a portion of the banking book or sub portfolio within the banking book, depending on the way you are going to approach the method to apply the standards, it can have very different consequences on the P&L or on the OCI, on the equity of the bank. And this is an important point. It depends on also on the scope of the standard itself, because if the standard had to be applied to credit risk hedging, in the case a bank hedge part of the interest rate risk and also part of the credit risk, it could become, in fact, the full fair value model. It's difficult to come to definitive conclusion on these elements because we need to read carefully the exposure draft and discuss what is your intention behind the different paragraphs of the exposure draft. That's clear that as it is a very complex issue, probably all the problems will not be treated within the exposure draft. And we will have to discuss a lot this document with you to be sure that we fully understand what is behind. That's the first one. Maybe a personal thought on that also. Let's suppose that it is a full fair value of the interest rate risk of all the portfolio of a bank, the portfolio including the banking book of the bank. Let's suppose also that we are in a fixed interest rate environment. In that case, the fair value of the of the full interest rate risk embedded in the portfolio will probably create high volatility on the equity. And there are thresholds beyond them a bank can't go because of limits that will be normally put in place by the bank itself and maybe by regulators. And the consequence of that means that the bank will have to stop producing fixed interest rate loans after the limit is reached. And these may have, let's say, macroeconomical consequences at the level of a country, for example. Can you imagine that all banks stop granting a fixed interest rate to customers because they have reached their limits? That's just the case.
When I agree, when you said what the intention of that, my intention is, I think, twofold. It is. Because currently, I think the current hedge accounting solutions which we have, I think, will not work really for dynamic risk management of net position in banks. And what I personally have seen, okay, that is what banks are doing is really to, because they have, if they're doing hedging with derivatives, they have to fair value the hedges. But if they have, on the other side, amortized cost, and then it creates accounting mismatches. So what they want to do really to avoid this accounting mismatches through, I think, designation of the derivative strand to individual assets and liabilities. That is in some kind artificial because it is not really reflecting really the how risk is managed via risk management in banks. And therefore, the one intention of this project is to make that more transparent, give a better insight for users into what is really risk management has done. And secondly, as I said, okay, it is really more for the entities, for the preparers then to Because as I said, this designation of individual items, which is then more or less done by then to reducing P&L volatility from accounting mismatches, which is really burdensome, administrative burden. And we really want to have a really kind of model which works better and cost benefits are more in line as the current proposals. But I agree also with you what you said, man, if you apply that to the whole banking book and you don't have any hedges, then it creates a lot of volatility. But there are maybe some banks which have in the banking books a policy of to hedge any interest rate risk from the banking book into maybe into the trading book. For such kind of banks, it would work very well because currently they have from the derivatives they have volatility, accounting mismatches, and if you do the revaluation then of the whole banking book, which is fully hedged, then you have really an offset and you don't have volatility. And that's the reason why we in the discussion paper really have this discussion of what should be the scope of this project. Is it more really to make the whole risk management transparent, even if you don't do any hedging, or should it be limited more on if you do risk mitigation through hedging? Any other comments, Kevin?
Martin, again, I'm just probably back on the devil's in the detail. And I know we're on a discussion paper, but I'm trying to work out what the potential disclosure consequences are, because if you're in dynamic risk and all of this, by the time statutory financials come out, 90 days after your financial year end, the picture you had on December the 31st is no longer the picture. And the consequences of this through a disclosure, I'm trying to work out, apart from just a general narrative, how it could ever be useful to the investor. It's very nice, it's right the way the banks are managing their business, but the information's old hat and expired and useless by the time the investor gets to see it.
Okay, we are going to include the basic ideas of disclosures in the discussion paper. Actually, we have identified four basic topics, themes, qualitative and quantitative issues, and we also going to discuss the scope of disclosures in reaction to the choice of scope in the application of PRA. But you are right. We have the challenges specific to dynamic nature of risk management. Honestly, the board discussion has not discussed carefully that specific challenge. So it is very, I understand this is a big challenge, so it's very, we are in the process to seek inputs from constituents. It's thankful if you give me some advices.
Point, can I just come in quickly to clarify? What we are looking at, fully appreciate, because these portfolios, the very essence of the model is a dynamic model, and we change the positions as we go along. So what the disclosures, what are proposed, and it is quite a disclosure-heavy discussion paper because we are trying to get input on what we think, people think could be possible. What it looks at is certainly, the balance sheet is a snapshot, so that's the point we look at and giving the disclosures on how it is working on. And one of the, how shall I put it, objectives of what we are trying to get at, and when we get into the details of the disclosure, is to show how effective has been the risk management for the period under consideration. So if I look at my dynamic risk management or the portfolio that's going on, my net interest margin, how has dynamic risk management been able to transform that net interest risk margin from what is there coming from the actual flows and before and after risk mitigation? So that's one of the objectives for the period, and that's how we try and split it up. And I know the devil's in the details. So if you look at the net interest margin, what we try and do is that, let's say if you were to target or the objective of the NIM was to achieve a net interest margin of 3%. And without doing risk management, you would have got, let's say, 2.5 or something. How much have you been able to achieve that? And we do that by splitting up and creating new line items. And then we show what is the, try and capture what is the impact of the risk management on future flows. Now that is through the revaluation impact. And again, we try and split it out. Agreed, but the focus is for the period that has gone by. And then there are qualitative disclosures that try and capture of what are the policies and procedures that have been put in place to achieve the dynamic risk management element. forward-looking disclosures, there are questions, but that is a challenge where we are asking that what do you think would be appropriate, if at all, how do we capture this going forward?
I'll make a suggestion that I expect the answer is no. Both sides. JP Morgan said they had some type of dynamic risk management and took a $6 billion loss because their hedging system didn't really work. Isn't that the test, to use an actual historical event, apply the discussion paper and see where potential useful information might have come out that would have assisted the regulator or investors or whatever?
Possibly. Yeah.
But I expect Morgan to say no to you, and I expect the staff not better get in. But there's a very useful build.
And I think one is very clear, man. If you have, for example, like in banks, if you have positions at amortized cost and you do hedging and you have to value the hedges through fair value through profit and loss, I think then the result gives you not any input how successful this risk management was. And I think we have to solve that, and that is the principal idea on that. Bob.
Martin, to your question, if it's needed more than banks, and really the question on slide 14, be available for all entities, my response would be the answer is yes, it is necessary for all entities. And we go back to slide 4, third bullet. Talk about other activities, talks about commodity price analysis. I would agree, FX risk. We invest in commodities to diversify, so it's not liquid. On point, but I would have that also. My question is on equity risk. So we have a large portfolio of investment of equities. In general, we're trying to manage to the all world index. And the problem that we have right now is we cannot get hedge accounting for our individual equity investments. And so while we're trying to manage it close to the all world index, there's a few differences, but we don't get hedge accounting. And so what we have is a pretty big disconnect actually on our income statement is the fair value of derivatives go through the income statement, whereas the fair value of the underlying goes through other comprehensive income. And we are doing risk management when we're entering into those derivatives to hedge our large equity portfolio.
Yeah, thanks. What we are really trying to get an understanding is how these things are working, and that is one of the things which we've put in. There will be a major section in the DP on foreign exchange risk as well, but the reason why we are bringing this up and why we are looking for input is I still think it's a little bit theoretical what we have put in, because we haven't seen much real life example on that. So once the DP comes out, our sincere request would be have a look and let us know how we can make that, because that's one of the biggest challenges we have, especially on the equity and forex or even commodity. I think we are still a bit more theoretical here.
Malcolm?
Yeah, I was wanting to pick up the foreign exchange point. So I'm still trying to get my brain, I have to say, around what we're trying to do here. Would this enable us to use sort of a proxy currency? I don't know, say, we talked earlier, you know, to say the Australian dollar to hedge New Zealand dollar risk or something like this. Is that what we are thinking about?
Okay. The question was the proxy currency, which is currently difficult to do around US 9 or 39. We haven't gone into that level of detail because we don't know how these hedges are or the risk is actually being managed. What it looks at doing is that if you are doing dynamic risk management and inflows and outflows, then we look at a consideration of how you should do it. Now, let me answer this question more in relevance to what we have done for interest rate risk. There we ask the question is that what is your hedge risk? Means if I look at the interest rate risk that's facing a bank on a funding curve side, it's not a single curve. So they could be raising Euribor, LIBOR, various depending upon where the funding is coming in, and then how do we collate it together in a single interest rate curve based on which the risk is being managed. Now, we haven't given any answers because it's quite a difficult question. We have given various alternatives and asked questions. How do you think this should be done? Should it be a single curve? Should you have multiple curves? How this will be? I think that how we develop that would also play or be relevant to the question you're asking, Malcolm, is what should be the currency risk? Because it's not a single currency. Depending upon liquidity and availability, you could be using correlated currencies to hedge the risk. So indirectly that is there, but not for Forex, because as I said, it's not that fully developed model as yet.
Olivia?
I personally think that I personally think that if there is a model in that way, it should be also possible to apply it for corporate. And even if today companies have, do not have example to give, if they do not do it, maybe they could do it when the standard will be in place. Because today we use models that give the best representation and financial statement according to the existing standards.
Okay. Maria?
I was just going to make that comment. So obviously the banks are very interested in the standard. I think that it should always be principle-based so anyone can apply it, because I do believe that people's behavior today is sometimes driven by the accounting outcome. So I think that's a big question. On the scoping, and the devil will be in the detail once a discussion paper comes out, the concern is always that we get too fine in the principles that we apply, that we're actually not going to get the ultimate benefit of applying the risk management that we do and the results thereof. So once we have only one example in mind, perhaps the way it gets worded is to reflect what we know happens versus in principle what we think can be done. So it'll be, I'm sure we'll have a lot of active discussion once we get the discussion paper, because the concern is not to be one industry, one type of management minded. So even when you make the question, you have the, it seems like, why are we trying to so finely define scope, perhaps, when in principle you might be reducing the effectiveness of the macro hedging standards by doing so. But again, I think it will depend on the discussion paper, but I certainly concur with Olivia that you might find more people thinking outside the box when you actually have it available to them.
Okay, thanks, Maria. Hiroshi?
I think that this macro hedge accounting should be applicable for all entities. And I have a question regarding the insurance companies. Is that possible to apply this macro hedging for insurance companies or insurance subsidiary? Part of it of the is applicable, and the rest is should can you apply the insurance standard? It's an exposure draft. I'd like to ask the relation with that. Insurance standard and this standard.
The standard, as Maria and others are saying, tries to capture dynamic risk management, not the standard, the discussion paper. And as of now, it specifically looks at insurance interest rate risk. It is primarily a model that looks at the matching the revaluations through P&L. So I think as of now, there's no absolute restriction on where it can be or cannot be applied. It discusses interest rate risk and how it is being worked. So, but from what I hear from our insurance colleagues and talking to them, I think the problem for them is primarily OCI and not P&L. So that I doubt whether it will help to reduce a mismatch or other things, because it's primarily a option that is discussed through the profit and loss revaluation impact rather than through other comprehensive income. And one reason being that is that there are, I won't go into it, there are some subtle issues that come up, like internal derivatives, because we discuss how you use internal derivatives for risk mitigation, because otherwise the model will fall apart. There with OCI and other things, it becomes quite troublesome.
Very good.
Two comments. First, related to Maria's comment, I think the board's purpose to have detailed the discussion in the DP is to let people know how the evaluation itself will be performed. But the board's intention is, in the future ED and future standards, will not include the detailed discussion about how to value or revalue the risk result. I'm right, Kumar and Yuji.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is, I mean, the DP as usual says that this includes a lot of details, because we are trying to develop it as we go down, and it becomes an exposure of, obviously, a lot of these details will start getting cut off.
And second point I want to give to those members particularly from manufacturing industry. That is, when board discuss this approach, and we once linked to the fundamental objective of how bank, why bank use this model. It's the purpose very similar to some extent, you know, the standard costing and the transfer pricing used by any manufacturing or commercial entities. And I always remember another Martin, when they summarized, you know, the purpose of such a mechanism, including, you know, easier to, you know, measure internal performance and easier to daily bookkeeping and others. And I think the transport pricing and the standard costing system in manufacturing and commercial industry will be the same. My question to those, you know, from manufacturing and commercial industry is, you know, because the purpose of this standard will not be only applicable to banks, and then how to apply to the manufacturing and commercial entities. I think the issues we should and you should think further, because not so many of the members from banking industry.
Okay. Then thank you very much.
Just quickly, before we move on to the gentleman, our request is do let us know, because for the other risks, that's where we are really struggling to find out, and we have done this for the discussions when we go through the outreach, how it will work. And that will be very critical for the board, because the DP does ask this question, because we do need the feedback to be able to develop that.
Okay.
Thank you, Eugene. Thanks for that.